If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Utter deep breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grime Eric Show. We are going to be chatting with Ronnie Figueroa a little bit later. Fun chat, kind of about recovery and that sort of stuff with old Ronnie.
Yeah, it was a blast.
You can always skip our, you and Ronnie had a lot in common in this one.
So totally.
Always a good one. You can always skip our lazy ramblings by going to the timestamp in the show notes to take you right to the interview with Ronnie. And you can skip all this part where we just chat and beg for money. Do support the show, though, if you do skip, though. GrimAmerica.ca/support. Sign up for monthly or make a one-time donation. Either of those would be great. There's a couple spots left for our event coming up in just less than 2 weeks, I guess, like 10 days. 10 days till the Serpent Mound event.
Solstice on the Serpent Mound.
With Dave Matheson and Brandon Powell, and now Mark England is also coming, and Dan Richards, Dan the D-Dunker. So, you know, quite an all-star cast.
I saved something about a paranormal experience somebody had on the Serpent Mound, where they were blown with this wind, and this bunch of leaves got blown up together, and this thing was really cool. It's an older account.
What'd you save it for?
Well, I was going to talk about it on our Grimerica Outlawed show, and then I just didn't seem relevant at the time. We were into other things. And then I thought, well, I'll save it for, you know, the Serpent show, and it was after, it was too late for that, I think. And then I thought I'll save it for an intro or something, you know? So, here it is. I found it.
Here it is. You going to read it then?
Yeah, let's read it. So, for no apparent reason, Harner suddenly felt a cold, irresistible sense of dread. He felt his hair stand on end. He was paralyzed with terror and felt completely hopeless. He then watched helplessly as piles of leaves began to creep up the hill toward him at the Serpent's Head. As the piles of leaves got closer to him, they gathered themselves into a larger pile, and they began swirling around him in a hypnotic dance. Harner stood transfixed by the spectacle until some part of his mind cried out that he had a camera in his car and he had to photograph it. He took off running back to his car, but he knew immediately that the spell, whatever it was, had been broken. Then he knew the answer to his question. Special things happen on that hill. They built the mound there because it is a special place. It is a place where the spirit world emerges. That is from Time Life. What year do you think that was from?
What year?
Yeah.
1957.
87.
Oh, I had the seven right.
But it was November 75.
November 75?
Yeah.
That's when it happened?
Yeah. He was driving near Locust Grove, Ohio. And he, there's a picture there from 75. It looks really cool. It wasn't far. So he took a detour to go to the mound. For some reason, he couldn't quite get a handle on it. He really wanted to go there, so it was like he was drawn to this place. When he arrived, the museum was closed, out of season, but he started to walk toward the Serpent's Head. As he walked, he asked himself, why this hill? Why had the ancients built this wonderful effigy on such an inconvenient hill? He reached the Serpent's Head. There was no wind, no one else was there, and it was peaceful. Until
what?
Well, he suddenly felt a cold, irresistible sense of dread.
Then what happened?
Then the thing I read previously happened.
What happened? I got a synchro for you. Maybe it's a synchro.
Okay.
So I needed to do, I've had rear brakes here on my shelf for a while. And I needed to do my front brakes. I knew I needed to do my front brakes. I sort of putting it off. Finally decided to go pick up the parts. Ordered the parts because they didn't have one of the rotors in. I ordered them from Canadian Tire. That took like 3 days, I think. And I was like, I'd ran to town to the city and I was on my way back from the city heading to Canadian Tire because I called and said the parts were in. I start noticing my brakes are a little bit soft. Then I pull into the Canadian Tire, get the parts, and I go and look and I notice I'm leaking brake fluid because one of my calipers on my rear brakes is extended too far. So now it's like leaking. I just thought it was weird that my brakes like literally failed as I pulled, not failed, like they still work. They're just like, they get looser and looser. I had to come straight home or I would have had to dump some fluid in them. But on the day I go to get brakes in the parking lot of the place,
I'm tired. Your brakes fail. Yeah, that's a good one. I like it.
It's a good one.
I've had some creepy ones around here that I can't even say. I don't even want to say publicly. I guess I should probably tell you at some point personally. But yeah, like fucking weird. Like, is it, remember how we used to talk about, are you foreseeing or are you precogging a future emotion as a synchronicity, or are you actually making it happen? That kind of discussion has been happening around here about some pretty creepy stuff. So.
Creepy stuff?
Yeah.
Can synchros be creepy? Is it still synchro if it's creepy?
I know. I guess, technically, deep meaning. So, yeah. Here's the one that's not creepy, but this kind of builds on it. I went out yesterday morning. I was looking at the tree in our yard, this, you know, beautiful tree there. And I noticed these two branches that seemed kind of like bare or like broken off, like stuck up in a weird, like in a weird way. I was like, have those always been like that? Like, has it always been like, did they break? I just kind of had this, like the one day I had this view and this thought of the tree. There was a windstorm that day and a massive branch broke off the tree, like massive, like this fucking big. It's just leaning up against the tree now and broke off the tree.
Man, when that tree,
it looks like
dead.
Not dead, alive. Like it ripped off a live branch.
Interesting. They get too big. I had that big tree that, you know, the trees get too big for the prairies sometimes. When I lived on the lake in Chestermere there, that one tree would lose some branches sometimes that were so fucking big. I'd be back there for like fucking 8 hours with the chainsaw bucking them up.
It's unbelievable how they just break. It breaks and breaks and grows and still like, have you heard that when they did the biodome thing, that when they tried to do that biodome where they had all the living stuff inside that dome and they couldn't figure out why the trees weren't growing in there, why they were dying?
No.
They're like, all the conditions are perfect in here. What do you think was missing?
They weren't connected to the ground, to the other trees.
The wind.
Really?
There was no wind. The trees need the wind.
Otherwise, they don't get strong enough trunk.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, you blow fan on your pot plants for that same reason.
Really? I didn't know that. Wow.
To get sturdy enough stalks to grow big plants. And then when they do get big, you put a trellis in to hold them up so the buds can get bigger without falling over.
Right.
Instead of fighting it in two different directions. Strengthen it when it's strong and then supporting it when it's old. Wow.
But it makes you realize how much the forest must like lose, because when just in the front yard with one tree in the front yard, there's twigs and sticks all over the yard again. I got to rake it up again before I mow it.
The forest has some safety in numbers.
Yeah. But I mean, there must be like, that's why there was like a practice, an indigenous practice to remove all the dead wood and sort of clean that up or whatever, right? Whatever they did there.
Man, I've been hunting out at Broken Hip where we've come out of the trees because so many are falling over.
So many trees have fallen over?
Yeah, well, we've been out there when it's windy, super windy, and you're like walking through the forested part. But then just keep hearing trees falling down. It's like, we better get the fuck out of these.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because I don't think you'd ever see it coming, you know?
Yeah, by the time you heard it, it would be like on the back of your head.
Be on you.
Imagine going hunting and getting killed by a fallen tree. A
tree. Yep. That's why they call them widow makers. Just fucking, just find your buddy crammed under a fucking tree. Well, I just about got this fucking trailer done. I had to take a day off to do my brakes.
Yeah, you go hard on that. I can't believe how far you went on it.
You know, when I get into something like that, I just fucking
go for
it. Got like a one track mind like that, you know?
How was putting the flooring in that? Did you have to take the old flooring out? Did you find the bottom of it or?
No, I just put it over top of the old stuff. If I would have ran it the short way, I feel like it would have been a lot easier.
Yeah.
But it looks better the long way.
Yeah.
But the trailer is not as flat as the floor would hope.
Oh, wow. Really?
I would hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got it. I mean, it wasn't bad. It took me probably 3 or 4 hours of flooring in there. I mean, the main thing is just all the cuts. You know, it's like, got to get around this, got to get around that. Yeah. So you're just constantly fucking cutting flooring. But I have all these tools just crammed in my shed. So it's nice to.
Yeah.
Pull everything out for a little while. And then, I mean, I used to just have a job where you just go and do that all day. So for me to just go into the trailer for 8 or 10 hours and just work is, I mean, my body's feeling it. I definitely notice that like I'm run down after a week of doing it because I'm not used to doing that. But I just like to get it done, especially the trailer, because it's basically the season, you know, it's basically, but when we get back from Serpent Mount, it's camping season. So it'd be nice to just,
be able to go away. Yeah.
Have it done. It's finished. I finished the inside today. So the inside is completely done. I got a few odds and ends to do on the outside. It's cool now because you can get all these new little gadgets, right? Like I was able to get a little 12 volt fan blow down on the bed and like little 12 volt charging things to put into the wall too. So you can just fucking plug in a USB to charge your phone. Little things like that. Change all the lights out to LED bulbs so that they're not burning so much power. And then I think all I got left to do is finish up the heater, which is all on the outside. I got the hot water figured out. I had to order a part. I had to use one of my little gator clips to bypass all the sensors till I figured out which sensor wasn't working. The hot water sorted.
What sensors for what? For the heat?
For the hot water tank.
What were they sensing?
It's like a safety thing. Sensor. If it gets too hot, it shuts off, I think. So
yeah.
But I got the hot water tank to work without it. So I was able to just order another one of those for like $20. I got to check the brakes still. That's the one thing I got left. I already got a brake controller in my truck. So probably this week I'll just pull the tires off and check the brakes, see if I need to. The good thing about them brakes is I was actually, just in case, I already found a thing on Amazon where it'll just fucking give you the whole brake assembly. Here you go. Boom. Just bolt a new one on. And it's only like $210 for all four tires. I'll check them first, see how they are, and then I'll probably do the bearings either way, because I think the bearings, it's like $60 to do the bearings all around.
On the trailer tires? On the four trailer?
Yeah, because you don't want those bearings heating up on you if they're seized up. But, you know, all in all, maybe another day's work on it. Outside stuff. The inside is turned over to the wife to do whatever she wants with.
Well, we didn't get ours delivered yet, so we'll see tomorrow, I think. Should arrive.
How much work you got to do?
Well, I don't know, actually. Quite a bit, I guess. Like painting, for sure. But I think everything else should be working okay. I mean, we might want to just keep the table. I mean, we've only taken a quick look at it, right? Well, we got to put a mattress in, so a new mattress, probably change some of the cupboards and some painting. We got to figure out what to do with the outside because it's not very nice.
I'm leaving my outside all sketchy looking.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I want people to be like, come in and be like, whoa. Because the inside's immaculate now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nicer than most campers you could buy.
Yeah.
You know, it's got real fucking good flooring in it, nice sliding door in it. It's like a nice kitchen table, very unique look because it's custom.
What did you mean by you use the door, extra doors for the wall?
Well, I bought a sliding door. Actually, I didn't even buy it. I got it for free on Facebook Marketplace.
For the outside, like for the outside?
Yeah, it's a bracket that you would put up in the roof so the door will slide back and forth. It like hooks on it and slides back and forth.
Okay.
But when I went to pick it up, she was like, we're running out, so we're just leaving it by the garage door. And then when I pulled up to pick it up, there's three doors there and two tracks to slide. I only needed the one door. But I mean, if you look at trailer walls, they're very much like it's like that thin 1/8 board on the outside and it's not a full stud. So I was looking at framing up a wall there with probably 2x2s and then like 3/8 plywood.
Why? Because you took that wall down or you took that wall down?
There wasn't a wall there. Yeah, wasn't there. It was just open right from the whole trailer was open from the bedroom.
Okay.
And I wanted the wall back up. So I was just going to frame it out with plywood.
So this is to separate the bedroom and the rest of the trailer, kind of?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought I saw in the pic. Yeah.
So then I was going to buy all that wood, but then I got those doors and I had two extra ones. So I was able to just fucking notch them to fit around everything with
they just stole them?
No, she left them off.
I'm just kidding. Wanted to
take everything.
Yeah.
And I think they were 30 inches each. So I was able to just put one full door in there and then rip the other door in half on the table saw, whatever it was. And then that fucking framed out the door, left a 28 inch opening. And I put the slider in the ceiling. And then the last piece slides open and closed to close that space up.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it saved me like $100 worth of lumber and a bunch of work.
Oh yeah.
Ton of and work, then there's no fasteners in it either already. So there's no fasteners. It's just done. And they were a nice wood color. So it doesn't even have to be painted. It just looks like a nice wood finish, kind of matches the floor.
Oh yeah. And
the flooring I got for free too. I mean, the one caveat was I had to, if I would have found the first place, I would have had enough. I think I had to pay $30 for the second batch of flooring. It was $30 for like 120 square feet. Of flooring, but the first batch I got for free, there was only 90 square feet. It wasn't enough to do the whole trailer. So I just the whole trailer is one color. Then there's the wall. And then in the bedroom is a different color. And then when I got the stuff to finish the bedroom, I had a shitload of it left over. So I ended up using that. I ended up using that to redo all the bunk beds. So it's nice and looks super nice. You know, if you look under your mattress, it's a nice finished fucking brand new thing there. And then I had enough to like take out the fridge. And that was kind of just shitty looking back in there. So I framed all that in with the leftover flooring as well. I just ripped all the laps off it and just used it as paneling.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
so now that gives me the option just taking that fridge out of there. You know, if we did want a fridge for something and we needed it for storage, it's a nice to put some shelves in. I'd imagine I'll keep the fridge in there. I mean, I took the propane fridge out, so the fridge right now only runs on 110.
Yeah.
So it's only if I have power or if I'm running my generator.
Yeah.
I still got a
trouble. So when you're traveling, you got to keep it in a cooler or something probably when you're traveling.
Yeah, it depends what I'm doing. Like if I was just depends where I'm going. If I'm going from here to Travers or something for the weekend, then I'll just plug it in here, put all my groceries in the fridge, unplug it, drive down there.
Yeah.
Unplug it for 2 hours and then plug it back in.
Yeah. So what were you going to do for a door? Like when you're going to build the wall between the bedroom and the rest of the trailer, what were you going to do for a door there?
I was always going to do a slider.
Like a pocket door kind of, or?
Yeah, exactly.
A just little pocket like door. Just
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or I was going to like build the wall, but the problem is you start losing space because I thought about just building a little mini wall on each side and then just taking a door, ripping it down with the handle on it and just sliding.
Oh, yeah. No, then you start. Yeah, you start.
But now I'll go from an inch and a half thick wall to a 6-inch thick wall and not a ton of space in those things.
No.
But it's nice to just have a full bedroom.
Yeah.
I mean, it's small. You got like 1.5 feet around the bed. I think on the two sides, you got 1 foot and a bit. And then on the back side, you got like 6 inches. But you got some cupboards in there to put your stuff in. And then the whole bed lifts up and there's a big storage thing under there. So the main thing for me is just, it was such a pain to go camping. I didn't mind the tents, but I was like, we'd spend fucking 4 hours loading stuff up. I'll grab this bin, grab that bin, get it all into the truck. And it's nice to just have everything set up again. So it's like, even if I do decide to take the tents out, none of the camping stuff is in my storage shed anymore.
Yeah.
It's all just in the camper. All this, the shit, the sleeping bags are in there. The fucking air mattresses are in there. The everything's in the camper.
Yeah.
If someone comes to visit, they can stay in there.
Yeah.
And I can just sleep on a fucking bed, dude, instead of on an air mattress on the fucking ground or all of that. Just like sleep in a bed makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, that eclipse, dude, was some of the brutalest sleeping I've had in years. Like the first night, just on the ground, no mat or nothing. Just like on the fucking hard Texas ground. It's not even like nice, soft Ohio ground. It's just hard Texas ground. Might as well be like fucking asphalt. Yeah. But light at the end of the tunnel. You done deal. Dude, I almost bought another one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about it. Yeah. Well, how big was it?
It shot up. It shot up at the last minute.
Was that an auction?
It was, yeah, because there's just up the road from me, there's an auction yard. So we've been driving by it all the time, and the kids are always looking in there, and they're like, oh, really? look at that. So we ended up finding the website for it. And I mean, I don't really have money to buy stuff.
No, but I mean,
here are these stories at auctions where someone, because it's an unreserved auction. So that means you can't say if it's less than this, it doesn't sell. So it don't matter. The bid is the bid. Like I could have bought today. I almost bought for like $4. I like, you know, those big, like they almost look like a big crane boom that you see getting drug behind trucks in the country. Yeah. Technically it's an auger. It's like a big pipe with an auger inside it that you put in grain and it shovels the grain up to put it in the top of the grain bins. It was $4. And I'm like, I just don't have room for it, you know, because I'm like, man, this thing's got to be worth more than $4. It's got to be worth a couple $100 on Kijiji. And it's not like I got to drive far to get it. It's a mile up the road. I could go get this thing and then just throw it up for sale.
Yeah.
Because most people aren't auction people. You know, they don't even fucking consider it. They just think, hey, I need a grain auger. Go on Facebook Market. Hey, there's one for.
Yeah.
And then I'm just looking at it because it comes with it. It's a trailer unit. Know what I mean? So it comes with wheels and an axle and all this stuff. And I'm like, for $4 to have an axle, I could build a trailer on or something like that. And not only that, just by the nature of the thing, I'm like, man, you could probably like, if I like, you know, strap one end down to the ground, I could put a come along on it, maybe use it to lift up a deer to do a deer up almost like a little crane, you know, because honestly, when I first saw those years ago, that's what I thought they were at first, was a little mini crane thing. Because it's such a big lever, you could let the one side down, hook it up to your generator or something, pull it up, swing it into your truck and set it back down.
So what did it go for in the end?
I don't know. I stopped watching it.
Well, what did the trailer
go for? I was watching, it was an old wooden trailer, a 6x8 wooden trailer, needed work, probably have to be replanked. But it had a log splitter. So the trailer was just to hold the log splitter. Technically, they were auctioning off the log splitter, but it came with the trailer. Just a log splitter, like a 2-stroke engine, and it's just got a fucking wheel that spins. So you just like put in a log and it splits it. Don't get your hand in there because it doesn't stop for fucking any reason. But I was like, man, to have that on the farm to like, because I could run sticks through it, let it chunk them up into smaller pieces. I have all this fucking wood here. And the main thing about that stops me from going and bucking it all up with the saw to stack it up into is splitting wood, man, is a pain in the ass. But if I just had this splitter.
Could you sell the wood?
I don't think I'd sell it. No, I just, there's not enough to really sell it. But what I like is just have this, like there's cords around here all over the place. So I'm going camping, go grab it. Power goes out, go grab it.
Yeah.
And I went on there this morning and there was like an hour and 45 minutes left. And it was $35.
What?
So I'm like, all right. So, and someone had an auto bid set on it. So I bid 35 and like instantly it's like, oh, someone bid 40. So I'm like, man, I bet you they got this maxed out at 100.
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm going to go to 105. So I charge 75, ding, 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 ding. But as soon as I do 105, it stops. And then I'm like, okay, well, I was kind of like, I don't really need this shit. So that was kind of my limit, you know, as $100 sort of playing around. And then someone outbid me in the last 10 minutes and got it for 120.
That's not bad though, still.
For a trailer, dude, that trailer's worth fucking $500 all day. Yeah. And if I just go to like Home Depot and buy some pressure treated wood and just like take off all the wood and replank it all, then it's worth fucking $1,500. And I could use a little trailer around. I mean, I wasn't even looking at the log splitter so much. I was like, fuck, $100 for a trailer that I could use as a dump trailer to
load. Well, I got a trailer. That I could give you.
You don't want a trailer?
Well, I gotta do the lighting and the electrical on it and stuff. Like,
that's all easy stuff. Yeah, I'll take it. I mean,
I'll send you a picture of it.
I got outbid on this one. So, but I was like, for $100 for a log splitter and a trailer, I mean, I'd be fucking crazy not to do it. Even if I only use the trailer as like a quad trailer around here.
Yeah, it's just
crazy not to do it.
Yeah.
But, and then I was thinking, you know what? If I would have waited till it was fucking 5 to 12 and done it right then, I probably would have got it. Cause what I figure happened is, buddy just ended up logging in and noticed that I had outbid his auto bidder.
Oh, is that an auto bidder that you can use on the auction site or is that?
Yeah. Like I was on the site and it's like, I could basically pick a max. So yeah. I could say, hey, I'll pay fucking, if this is less than $150,
yeah,
I'll fucking grab it. Yeah. And it'll basically, if someone bids, it'll outbid them by $5 over and over until you get to your limit.
Wow.
Dude, they had an e-bike on there, brand new in the box for $390.
Wow. Those are like $1,300.
Yeah, I just don't need an e-bike and I don't have enough extra money to be like stocking shit up here to sell it on Kijiji.
I know. That's the thing. You need to start, you know, working on Kijiji. It's not like you could just, you know, it all takes effort and time, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah, exactly. But now it's just like in my phone now. So it's like, cause I think they do like one every 3 months or something, but it's for a couple of days. Like there's a bunch of other stuff that closes tomorrow. But I don't really need nothing, but it's almost like, man, this is some fun. Like, dude, there's a fucking truck on there you could have got for $500. I don't know what it needs. I think they have a day, but if you're a mechanic, if you're mechanically sound, I mean, why not? I'm really just kind of looking to see, because they had some, like I say, they had that truck camper was $450. And I was like, for $500, I know I can fucking take this thing, and it's right the perfect time of year too, right? I can fucking take this thing for $500, dump another $500 and fucking this and that. If it's electrical, that's all easy. Roof, easy. You know, dump another $500 into it. I'm not going to go hard like I did on my trailer because that's my trailer. It doesn't need laminate flooring and all that. But you could dump $500 in it, get it so it's fucking sound with a good roof on it, looks clean when someone looks in it, and that's fucking $2,000. You know, it's just like an easy fucking.
How big was it?
I think it was an 8 foot. But I mean, that one really shot up. Because when I talked to you, it was on for four something. By the time it was noon, I think it went for $1,150 or something.
Wow. Yeah. That makes sense. Holy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't believe how some of these new trailers, or like newish trailers, are how expensive they are now.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, to get the one I got for $1,000 is fucking bonkers.
I went over to the. There's a new trailer place near me here. And I went over there the other, like last summer, and I was looking around. Cause remember you were looking for a trailer. I was like, oh yeah, well, what can you get for $20,000? Nothing.
Nothing.
You got nothing.
A little teardrop. You're
like 60, 80. I'm like, what?
Get a teardrop.
Camping is the big business.
Oh yeah. Fucking campers. Imagine how much fuel gets burnt dragging them things here or there.
Yeah.
And everywhere. Well, I unfortunately do not have any new supporters to mention.
Oh, yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. We have somebody that sent
the $50, right? That was this week. You have a note?
I think I do. I know it's Gary.
Technically, it's an outlawed donation.
Well, no, I think he said I think he subscribes to both. Now I can't find him. Maybe I see all his synchros that he sent us last.
We lost it.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Let me see if I can find it.
Oh, there it is. Oh, you sent it to me. That's why. So he says, hey, Darren, just wanted to send you an extra $50 on top of my monthly support for Outlawed. Between Outlawed and your other show, you've managed to claim the top spots in my podcast lineup, so I figured it was only fair to throw a little extra in the tip jar. I really appreciate the work you guys put into these shows. They make the work day a lot more enjoyable. Keep up the great work. Thanks again, Gary. Well, thanks, Gary. Really appreciate it. I think that I mean, he mentioned this show and he's an Outlaw supporter too, but
well, appreciate you.
That'll fit.
That'll fit. Tell your friends to sign up for Outlaw. Thank you for the support. I hope you have a good day at work. Don't work too hard. Other than that, I mean, you guys got to get signed up. We need supporters. It's critical. You can also check out Great America Outlawed for other podcasts. Contact at thecabin.com for trips and events. Adultbrain.ca for audiobooks. And simulationmaps.com for all the cool maps. Other than that, I guess we might as well get out of here. Get into the chat with Ronnie.
Yeah, I got a bio here for him. He's licensed mental health counselor, certified hypnotherapist, extensive training in EMDR, EFT, NLP, NAC, the Sedona Method, Reiki, and many other holistic approaches. He also teaches techniques as a course, so you can help others. Find out more about him at ronniefigueroa.com. And his email is in the show notes, along with a link to his YouTube channel as well. So Ronnie, RonnieFigueroa.com.
There you have it, guys. Enjoy the chat with Ronnie Figueroa and, of course, support the show.
Ronnie Figueroa, welcome to Grime America. How are you?
I'm doing well, and thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, this will be exciting. We love these, these personal transformation stories, addiction, help, counseling, all that kind of stuff. You've got 40 years experience helping people, so it's I'm somewhat kind of surprised we haven't crossed paths yet. I've been through addiction myself, and then come out the other side. So we talk about it a little bit on the show, but, and I love how you've got specialization in so many different modalities. We've had shows on, like EMDR and EFT and stuff. So fascinating. Yeah. But I mean, maybe let's start by just a little bit about yourself, maybe your sort of transformative story, in the beginning, okay. And we can go from there.
Sure. Well, let's see. I was a wild teenager. I guess I'm that's nothing new, right? Partying, a mother raised by a single mother in Paterson, New Jersey, really rough area, really rough neighborhood. My stepfather was a bootlegger, so he would bootleg alcohol. He was also, they played numbers and things like that. So they were involved in that kind of thing. So when he would bring his alcohol up to Paterson get it from the South and bring it all up in these big mason jars and whatever. And so I sipped on one. It's this clear liquid and, it's got the mason jar. It's terrible. But then it made me feel good, So we kept doing that, me and my friend, and we did it so much. And I'm about 11 or 12 years old at the time. And we would get high. We would get drunk. And we would use it so much that what we would do at times, because he would sell it to the neighborhood people, is we would replace the alcohol with water so it would stay up there. We did it so much sometimes that it was almost all water. It just freaked him out. So that kind of started that part of the addiction, you know, cycle. I joined the service during the Vietnam War, you know, not to fight. I wasn't into fighting or anything, but I figured, you know, we could be in the CBs and maybe help people, you know, that way. It was a good experience. I'm glad I did it because, you know, we started with the drinking and I was about 18 or so when I joined. And I needed something. I just felt I needed something inside myself, you know, because things just wasn't working out. A lot of insecurities, a lot of all those kind of things are going on. See, now I'll rattle on, guys, you know, like this on and on.
So yeah, that's okay.
Just let me know. So after I got out, you know, the service was pretty good for me. I needed it. It helped me to develop like this teamwork kind of mentality and just, you know, joining together and focusing on something outside of the need to have alcohol. So it was good to be in a community setting that way for me. So I got out and, you know, I went back to school. I started going to school and whatever. A lot of other things were going on. I just started to get back to my old friends. And guess what I started doing again?
Drinking
and smoking too much. And, you know, so we were doing that for a while. And I'm saying to myself, I shouldn't be doing this much. Because even at that point, I knew I was doing it too much with the addictive personality and all that kind of thing. But there was the addiction, the drive, the need for something more that I felt I needed in my life. And I kept searching. And at the time, too, I was searching for other things that would help. I got into psychology. I went back to school for my master's degrees and stuff like that. And I figured some of that would help me.
But, so you were a pretty put together drinker then. And, you know, like some dudes, when they get into drinking, there's no way they're like getting a psychology degree and stuff like that. I mean, Graham was pretty high functioning as well until he wasn't, sort of thing.
Until he wasn't. And then that's the way it went. A functioning alcoholic, you know, a weekend binge. And, you know, even at work, because the hangovers, I would bring my little bottle in my shirt, you know, sometimes, and I have it in my drawer to have sips during the day as I'm working. So I kind of really balanced it out. And I was doing well. I was even an athlete at the time. I was working out a lot. I was getting into martial arts, doing this kind of thing. And I guess didn't realize it, but it's true. It's a cumulative thing, especially when you get older. It just starts to wear and wear on your body. But your mind is telling you, you know, I can do this. It's like, you know, oh, yeah, we're invulnerable. Something inside of us keeps telling us we can do this. So I did. And I'm in my 40s. I'm breaking it apart a little bit. I may not be going too well in sequence, so forgive me.
That's okay, yeah.
But 40s, I'm still doing it. Got another degree. I went to California, I think it was 2011 or so, and I started a business there, caring for children on the autism spectrum. So I did that, and I came back to New York in 2016. So I did that for a while, and you think, again, that would help. And I'm still questioning, needing something all this time going on. Started getting more into alternative kinds of things at that point, you know, investigating things like EMDR, going to courses, getting certified. Even like studying a little bit with the person who originated EMDR, EFT got involved with, various kinds of things, Reiki healing even, along with my psychology degree. And also I because my degree was in research and statistics, I need to see something that's real because there's too much stuff out here that, you know, they have a label for. What are we calling it these days? The woo-woo kind of mentality. Some things are too far out there. So I try to see things and to do things now. And even then, that can show itself to repeat itself over and over again. One of the things I wasn't seeing that was repeating itself over and over again is how I was killing myself with alcohol. I wouldn't look at that to accept it, but I knew I needed something. So I got involved with these various kinds of things. At about 50-something, I died. I was working out. I ran to the gym. I had a pint or so of vodka before I did it. And I got to the gym and I swam, and then I went into the sauna, which I, you can sit in the sauna for a long period of time, and I passed out. My heart stopped. The EMTs came. They had to resuscitate me and everything like that. Through the VA, I went through the VA hospital. I was totally out of it. I was, you know, unconscious. So because my heart had stopped, they said, we better try a pacemaker. They did the resuscitation stuff, and then they put the pacemaker in. And I've had the pacemaker in my chest, even though today they're telling my heart is perfectly fine. So, hey, there's a wake-up call. Yes? No? Still didn't do it. So I'm practicing all these things and learning how to try to do it better. I started going to the meetings more and more. I started to do all kinds of other kinds of seminars and you name it, all these various types of seminars. I won't be a name dropper, but you know, you name it. I've gone to them, you know, that sort of thing.
And the 12, are you talking about like 12 step meetings, that kind of thing, or?
I went through all the 12 step meetings, but I'm talking about other meetings that were geared toward helping a person's, or you heal yourself, whether spiritually or internally. Well, I'll be a name dropper. I've gone to the Tony Robbins. I went to the, I went through the, Joe Dispenza's. I went through all of them. You name them. I've gone through them.
I was just watching a Tony Robbins video right before we started the show.
No way.
Okay, cool, I guess. Yeah, they were very helpful, but there still wasn't enough because they weren't really demonstrating to me what was really needed deeper down inside of me. So I think there was one time during that, before I came back to New York, where I was like really questioning. Oh yeah, I did hit rock bottom during that time too, with the passing out and everything like that. I also developed a diagnosed asthmatic condition. I had with the pacemaker, a diagnosed seizure disorder, and I went on disability for a while because I had hit rock bottom that much. And then I had this business going on at the same time, which I don't know if that was very ethical at the time to be collecting a disability and having a business too. But, you know, I was able to do that to keep have a business establishing while I was on disability. And I was driving one day and just really distraught, I think, but I'm wanting to get help and still able to function relatively okay. And I went through this bookstore and I was looking at different books because, you know, I was self-help. Self-help was my big thing during that time also. And so I went and I hit this turnstile and a book fell down. And I looked at the book and it said The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle's book, you know, and it was just there. It was just there. So I picked it up and I'm reading it and I started to read it. And I says, maybe this is a sign because I was into that kind of stuff. And I read it and it really helped me transform something much deeper than anything else had. And I'm not saying it's just the book. And I want people to understand this. It was accumulation of things in my life.
Yeah.
But it took me because I was too thick-headed all that time. But then again, I do believe this very strongly. Things happen. You know, I don't call it coincidence necessarily. Synchronistic kinds of events do occur. And I think that was one of them. And I needed it. And it happened at the time where I really needed it. And it just kind of woke me up more so than probably most any other thing did. And again, it wasn't just the book. It was an accumulation of stuff I had been doing. But I needed that to get me to go to that next step. I'm not being too long-winded here.
Not at all. I mean, I was going to mention Eckhart Tolle when you were talking about Tony Robbins and all, because that was part of my story is Eckhart Tolle.
Was it the same book?
No, it was A New Earth. So I brought
The New Earth. I read that one too after.
I brought The New Earth to recovery and I was reading it in the groups and stuff. And I was quite the geek with it all. But yeah, it was kind of like that, you know, the present moment, that whole thing, right? Learning about all that and being aware. Yeah. And yeah, so that was sort of part of my story too. So, and then I was listening to The Power of Now in audio. I listened to it back then.
That's what makes all this like make sense to me, because even you saying that to me, that's synchronistic that you're, you said that. And I'm seeing more and more of these kinds of things occur. The more I started to evolve or change, the more I saw these things almost parallel, like these acts, these synchronistic events occurring over and over again. Now, we could be brainwashing ourselves and it was just coincidence and we're just looking for everything that's there. But yeah, they happen so uniquely and so much more consistently that it helps me to say, hey, there's something really, really working with this. It's helping me to feel better about myself. It's helping me to do my business better. It's helping me counsel other people better.
Yeah.
And I'm still changing. Don't get me wrong. You know, I can still lose it just like anybody can. But I'm at a place where I can say now, let me see if I skipped anything I should have said. So that helped. And then I started to see how I could stop drinking and stop smoking more readily. I had tried, you know, we do try, but I couldn't do it. All of a sudden, within that time frame, within shortly after the book and all these other things were going on, I stopped drinking completely. I stopped smoking in a relatively short period of time together shortly after that. My lungs are fine now. The seizure disorders went away pretty much completely. And I don't want to, you know, lie about that because I have had a seizure or two along the way. But when I had the diagnosed condition where I was taking medications for all of those things, I would have one at least once a week. Consistently. I'm talking about tonic-clonic seizures, too, to knock down, drag out kinds of ones. And it's all, it can be, you know, documented through records.
And you're on the medication then, and now you're not.
No, none whatsoever. No.
Yeah, no, it doesn't even matter if it's real or if the synchros are real or not, because it affects, it's the deep meaning that really affects you, you know? And that, I think there's something extra powerful about what you said about the power of now and all that, because that was what helped me through addiction. Was once you start watching your thoughts, or once you start being aware that, like, in this present moment, like, I'm not my thoughts, that has to do specifically with cravings and addiction and all that, because then you start realizing, oh, I'm starting to crave this and now, and I'm like, you know, it's my issue was hard drugs as well, so that's kind of what brought me down, was like cocaine. So you know, you could start seeing, playing it all out in your head, which I couldn't really do before I started reading Eckhart.
And there you go. And to me, that's like the icing on the cake, the idea of learning how to be genuinely aware of what's going on in your body and seeing yourself, you know, and accepting that, learning to accept it over a period of time. Because there's a lot of, I was going to curse, but maybe I shouldn't do it on the show. There's a lot of stuff inside of us that we don't want to see, or the unconscious mind is causing us not to look at it.
Yeah.
Because we all have stuff. We all do, you know?
Yeah.
And so the more I was doing that, especially the aspect of looking at myself and learning how to see me and accept me with all of it and expose me. That's the vulnerability part, you know, that I use in what I call my fourfold way of life. So anyway, from there, moved back to New York in Ulster County, 2016. Was okay, not drinking, not smoking. But still there was this like still drive of something was missing. Something was missing. And so I just kept like looking at other things that I should be doing. You know, these days I realized that I needed, well, three basic things we all need: sleep, good diet, and a good awareness of ourselves as human beings, right? So I was learning to do that more so, but my diet really sucked and my sleeping habits were still really bad and I just didn't care that much. And I would stay up very late because I had to do other things to feed my addiction. It wasn't drugs anymore, but then it became binge watching TV and eating junk food. Especially my favorite was like dessert, like Häagen-Dazs. That was my thing. I was like, yeah, it's time for some Häagen-Dazs now. And I would just be devouring this stuff, you know. So I got to learn to see that the addiction can stay within us. It doesn't have to be the alcohol or the drugs or whatever. It's because of that lacking of something deeper down inside of us that we all need to learn how to bring up and heal. and evolve from. You know, I'm seeing that more and more. So now at 72, you know, I don't do any drugs. I went back into athletics, and at 69, I did this event called the DECA Strong event. You know, I'm sure you've heard of it before, but it's a pretty grueling event. They've called it a mini decathlon, basically.
I was going to say, it sounds like there's 10 nasty things in that.
Yes, very grueling. That at the end of it, you're just, you know, on the ground. And I placed third in the world, you know, at 69, but my age.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah, good for you, though. That's great.
But at my age group. And I'm saying all these things not to promote me, right? And it's kind of like we're saying with that principle, that it's not just me. There's a part of me, I don't think, because I believe, mind, body, and this energy or spirit or whatever you want to call it. And the more we can come together with all those things, the more we'll heal, and then it's easier to change. So I started doing better, and I met my wife then in 2017, and she was such a good catalyst, right? To help me with the other things that I needed, better sleep, better focus, better diet, because she's a vegan, a vegan, it's called. Don't get me wrong, I love meat. I'm going to never stop. But she's never drank. She never drank, or she never did any kind of drugs or anything like that. So that was good for me to be with a person like that. Again, I think this thing was brought to me. It wasn't just like it just happened coincidentally. I needed it, and there it was, and it helped me even that much more so. To where today, I feel better, you know, than I ever have. Don't get me wrong. I still have my things going on. It's been a very rough. It's been one of the roughest weeks that we've had to deal with all the things that are going on in our lives. I won't give you all the things, but so many things hit. Now, I've had a lot of things happen in my past, and sometimes these things are going to occur to us. They're going to keep happening. But if we get together with ourselves enough, it's almost like they don't bother me nearly as much. Don't get me wrong. I'm rattled because of the different things that are going on right now.
It's a totally different thing, though, isn't it?
Huh?
It's a totally different thing, though, isn't it? It doesn't get you...
I can smile, and I'm not going to go.
Completely off track or whatever. It's just
I didn't even get like any Haagen-Dazs.
So would you call that your spiritual? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Graham.
Would you call that your spiritual awakening? Then was that like? Did you that sort of in AA they talk about, or in the 12 steps they talk about, like there's different types. There's a long sort of slow one, and there's instant sort of awakenings.
Mine were developing for years and years and years. Maybe I needed that to help other people see they don't have to do that.
Exactly.
And that's one of my key things these days. You don't have to do that.
It can be quick.
And the awakenings are continuing to happen. I'm at a place right now where it's like I'm very, very excited, more so than I ever have been, where I am right now. And it is by virtue of the practices that I'm doing more right now. Realizing that the most important thing, I think this is what people really need to understand, the most important practice and belief is that you already have it within you, and not to rely completely on anything, whether it's the 12 steps, which are a great program, whether it's all these other, you know, seminars and things we were mentioning about, all of these other things that we get in these tools, because there's so many of them. And a lot of these people are making millions of dollars off of it. And there's also a statistic that says the ones who go through all of these seminars and workshops and everything like that and read all of these books, the majority of them, I mean, some of them are saving their lives. Of course, we have to admit that. But a majority of them fall away from it anyway. So I think people need to understand that we have enough of that within us, you know, and learn how to tap into that more so with the aid of those other things. I don't know, Darren, were you going to ask a question before?
I don't know if it was the bio or whatever you sent over mentioned breath work in there. Was that something that came with the wife, or is that something because we got some people we do work with on breath work. So I'd be interested in what you're doing and what your protocol was.
Well, I really got into it many years ago, hearing about it. I even, you know, read a couple books, and I was doing different kind of breath work, breathing and whatever. And then I let it go, just like all the other stuff. Nowadays, though, you know, I've kind of narrowed it down to what I believe is the best for me. And it's helped a lot of other people that I'm working with. Basically, I'm calling it like the practice is a three-part practice, right? There's my fourfold way of life. And then there's my three-part breath, awareness, and heart practice, right? And what that entails is, let me do it this way. Let me explain the fourfold way that I believe in, and then I'll interject the breath part with the awareness and the heart kind of thing. And there's another group that does that also, similar to it, called Heart Math. But anyway, my fourfold way of life, which I think it can be a practice too, but it's so important for us all to see that this is already within us and we need to work with this and live with this all the time. First and foremost, what we're talking about, being aware of who you are in your body, right? Some of that can be construed as like, you know, just a cognitive practice, but what you want to develop is something that becomes organic and experiential rather than just cognitive. So once you learn more and more how to say to yourself, okay, I'm seeing myself, I'm aware of me and my body. You can't help, well, like even when I do it, even when I'm explaining it, I'm not going to live it maybe like if I were totally alone, but I'm practicing it even as I'm speaking it. And I just wanted to take a breath because it's like, oh yeah, here I am. I see Ronnie in his body, here with Graham and here with Darren. And I see you also more so because of that. In the past, it would have just all been me. And it's not a selfish kind of thing that I'm saying. It's more of like a reflection of who I am with the second part of it, which is vulnerability. Trying to understand what vulnerability means. And basically what that means is to be that open, not just with, oh yeah, some people say, I'm very vulnerable. I say anything I want. I do. No, it's like being that allowing whatever fears are there, whatever insecurities are there, whatever, all these things are there to reveal themselves. You don't have to throw it out to everybody else, but you need to learn to really be honest with yourself with them more than anything. That's the second piece of it, the vulnerability. Third piece is taking a risk within that. And again, I'm just going in order like this. It's all one thing, you know, and you can learn how to just be in it all experientially, but I'm just breaking it down. But the third part is within that, taking the risk and vulnerably presenting this out more and more to everyone, to yourself, to the world, to everybody. Again, incrementally, you don't want to just blurt out everything to everybody all at once. But more you do this practice over and over again, it becomes easier and easier to do, and it becomes more and more experiential rather than just cognitive. And the fourth part, you have to trust it all. You have to find that trust within taking these risks and living this way. And the more you do that, what needs to happen is that you see more evidence that this is working for you, whether it be evidence of outside synchronistic events, whether it be you healing yourself readily, more readily and sooner by living this kind of life. That's the fourfold way. Again, I'm asking, if I'm being too long-winded, please interject or whatever. Now, the three-part practice goes something like this. And people can do it alone. You can close your eyes if you want. If you're alone, people can even do it now. If there are other people who listen, they can try it this way with me, because I'm going to just do it, just to do it. Like, I'll close my eyes.
Unless you're driving. If you're driving, don't close your eyes.
Please don't close your eyes. But if you do, you know, like, just kind of make sure. If you got psychic, but if the people have psychic powers, they should be able to do that, no? Well, no, you know I'm kidding. Maybe we should even put that in there.
Grand America does not endorse driving with your eyes closed.
Exactly. And that's a good thing to make sure we tell people that.
Or mowing the lawn, or, you know, doing any kind of data, or operating heavy equipment. I mean, you know.
Those kind of times you don't do it. Yeah. Or flying a plane.
Pause and then get back to it when you find a parking lot. Let's do it though. Let's
going down the slope and skis. You want to make sure you know where. Yeah. So I hope somebody goes, well, what about this? No. and they do something. Oh God, no. So if people, if you're alone in your home and you're sitting down and you know you're safe enough to be able to, and you don't have to close your eyes, but to be able to realize that there's three parts that can be very, very effective. And I believe in simplicity. The one is that awareness part of you, again, always holding on to that. The second piece is just basically taking a breath with that that issue that you might be dealing with. Bringing it to your heart or your soul area, whatever you want to call it, but where you can have some kind of connection. If you don't, just have it almost literally just going to your heart with the in-breath, then releasing. It's an out-breath. Not really trying to figure out, you know, how you're doing it, where the in-breath is going, but just practicing that. And just do that several times. Again, here I am. I'm aware of me taking a breath in, coming to my heart, my source, and just releasing it. You can do it with sound. Sometimes that helps, like that expression. Again, it's like, I'm feeling good already. And it's hard for me to do it while I'm explaining it like this too, but I'm getting the effect of it. There's the breath. Again, but above it all, just keep aware. That awareness aspect is so important. Now, and that's just with issues that you may have and then you want to release it. Not thinking about where it's going or whatever. Because when we expose something, I believe very strongly, there is a universal thing that's always here and already within us. It absorbs. It extinguishes itself, right? And what's good, too, on top of that, if people want to add a little bit more, it's the idea of doing the opposite of bringing the positive thing in there. Okay, I'm dealing with this issue. Like, what would mine be right now? A little bit anxious because of all these things that are going on. And some of the insecurities that come up, like, oh, what's it? I hope I can sound well on this podcast. And I can breathe all that in. And do we need to find out each and everything? No, it's a feeling. What are you feeling? Because it's all connected. Everything that we're feeling right now for most people, and some research is showing this, all the accumulation of traumas that we've had and the conditionings that we've had and the problems that we have, if we have a trigger now, like my trigger this week or whatever, it's not so much just this trigger. It's an accumulation of all of the triggers. So I don't need to have to figure out, okay, I gotta do the meditation or the three-part practice for these specific things. It's just for what I'm feeling because it's an accumulation of all of those feelings. So I'm looking at the feeling itself, accumulation of years of feelings, years of emotion. Years of anger, whatever would be coming up because of that trigger.
Except that you've been doing all this work, so does that stop the accumulation from happening because you're releasing it on a regular basis or transmuting it?
Great question.
That's why you don't get triggered so much, because there's less like density with the past trauma, you know?
You get triggered less because you're relieving it from those things. And that's what I'm finding. My wife even says this. She says, you've really changed. You don't get as angry as you used to.
Yeah.
I still do, but not as I used to. And the idea of looking at those three parts of usually what it's going to be is very simple. It's going to be either anger, fear, or sadness or suppression, right? And basically we live that way every day with the fight, flight, or hide concept. We all do to some degree, more so than we should. You know, like we're not like the animals. It's like, okay, I'm fine, I'm grazing. Uh-oh, here comes the thing. And then they you know, react to it. We live that way all the time to some degree. Some people don't realize how much because it can be a deep unconscious thing also. Anyway, the positive part would be more like, okay, let's just say I have some fears or anxieties, and I'm relieving those with this practice. I like to breathe when I do that. I can't help it sometimes. And then, okay, so what would be the opposite of fear? It would be, for me, and you have to look inside yourself sometimes, it would be, okay, now I'm going to have more trust. I bring more trust in that same process. I breathe in trust, bring it to my heart, and I just breathe out trust, and I exhale trust. And what that does, it's so cool because you're doing it for yourself, and it's not like just releasing it to the universe. You're saying, I'm putting out trust to the rest of the world. I'm just letting that energy out at the same time. So I hope you see those two things that can go together with it. And it's been very helpful for me. And it's helped a lot of other people that I say. But for me, you know, it's not just those things. A person has to discover their own individuality within any of these kinds of practices, if any of that makes sense. And even as I say these things a lot of times, this is where I like what Eckhart says sometimes. A lot of times, I don't even know if what I'm saying is going to make sense. I'm not thinking about it so cognitively. I'm just letting it come out as it comes out. And I hope it makes sense. Does it make sense, guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is very, very similar to a spiritual alchemy meditation that I kind of narrated, sort of wrote up from a previous guest in his book and all that. And he was talking about, you know, taking those emotions into your center, the centers of your body, and then replacing them with love. And it kind of, it transmutes that negative energy into positive energy. So it reminds me a lot about that. Very similar.
Gotcha. Yeah. Can I ask you guys a question with it? Because I've seen some of your podcast titles and everything like that, and I've gone through a few of them, and there's so much of this really, you know, if you want to call it alternative or just, you know, these kind of things. What have you found that works the best for you guys? Or what do you think? I don't know if that's a fair question right now, but
I just smoke weed.
Okay, good. That's a good one. That might be the best. My mom does too, and she's 91 years old. She's never been as happy as she is right now.
Yeah. Graham lives a cleaner life than I do. In some ways. In some ways, I lean a cleaner life than him. But, I mean, if we could combine it, we'd be living a pretty clean life.
Well, you know, that makes sense, actually. Yeah. I mean,
I like what you're talking about here. I mean, I've tried so much. One of the things that's helped me recently was kind of sending out love at night and really trying to not hold resentments to whatever's going on in the world and whatever's happening, you know, even my enemies, yeah, that kind of stuff. So almost like a Christ-like forgiveness or love. I was trying for a while. That seemed to be helping a little bit, but I mean, I just like to try and stay present and positive and look at things from a fascination angle instead of being disappointed with certain things. So I, you know, that's kind of where my practice is at right now.
Gotcha. So would you say like it's kind of where you're not really trying to make anything, and weed does help this too, not trying to make anything happen so much, but just kind of living in the moment, if you will, or being, I rather just say being aware, because if I'm really truly aware with this connection that I have, I can't help but live in the moment. But just that, pretty much. Yeah. Something.
I probably like transmuted mine mostly into working. I mean, that seems to be, that's probably like most people would say that's, other than the weed, that's probably my vice. You know, I don't drink too. I mean, I had a drink last night, but I don't drink, you know, like we went to Easter Island. I drank too much there, but you know, we're on an island with 20 of our friends and it's festive, and I kind of consider it, because for the first few years, I didn't drink at them because I was just not drinking. I just had passed, and I used to drink a lot. But
well, you seem to handle it a lot better these days. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like I can. It was probably, I mean, because I was doing a lot of cocaine back in the day and that kind of stuff too. So once you just get, once I quit for long enough, I was able to sort of dabble back into it because I was going to the events and all my friends are having a time and having some drinks, and you don't need alcohol to have a good time, but sometimes it's fun. Yeah. And if you're using it properly, I would say it can be fun. So, like I say, so now it's like when I go on the trips, I just sort of expect that there's going to be a couple nights of festivities sort of along the way, pay the price for that with the hangover. But when I like just sort of graduated out of party mode, because with me, it wasn't even like I was addicted to the drinking. I probably was, and the cocaine and all that. But my big thing was mostly just partying. I just always wanted to party. Let's go party. Whatever the party's doing, I'm down. You know, wherever the party's heading, I'm down. And then when I had kids, I quit. And it seemed to just be now it's work. You know, now it's like when I get out of bed in the morning, I'm thinking, I mean, and it wasn't, it's not like that when you're, when you have a job probably, but you know, Graham and I have, are blessed enough to just work for ourselves. So it's like,
it's, when you say that, I mean, are you saying that in the sense like the work is a good thing? Yes.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, other people probably say I work too much. You know, it's not uncommon for me to be down here from the, in my office from the time I, especially in the winter, from the time I, you know, get out of bed within an hour of when I'm out of bed till within an hour of when I'm going to sleep.
Yeah.
In and out of my office.
Who am I to judge, right? But I know, like my wife, she constantly likes to move and to get things done. It kind of scares me sometimes, but she's happy doing that, and she's very constructive doing that. And she, and she's a spiritual person, much more. She's on the woo side. Don't tell her I ever said that.
There's like a zen in it for me too. You know, it's like my wife will tell me to just slow down or relax or do nothing for a while. And for me, it's just like, if I'm doing nothing, I'm kind of going fucking bonkers. You know, I'm like, they're going through the list in my head of all the things that,
that need to be done.
That need to be done. And so I've probably got a weird aversion to wasting any time. I feel like I wasted enough time in my 20s.
So, but is that okay for you for the rest of your life? And are you happy with it? Whatever you
do. I'm happy with it for now.
Okay. You say that reluctantly. I don't know.
Well, because I think if you were well enough off to retire, let's say early, just as an example, you know, you probably might feel that in some ways, like you'd be productive doing other things, hunting or working around the house or whatever, but I don't think you'd have the same amount of giddy up and go. I think a lot of your giddy up and go is to manifest, you know, a
proper, we're still building.
Yeah. We're still building. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're lucky enough to do what we love for work, but it's still, we still have to show up every day. Otherwise, you know.
I'm lazy. I get lazy sometimes. I don't want to get out of bed, you know. But then I also get like, I need to get things done. I need to get things done. It's not like I'm loving to get things done. But I
think it's a man thing. I think it's a man thing. I think that's kind of what's missing from from modern society is like, if you go back, you know, a couple generations, those dudes weren't ever not working. And it's not like they were all fucked up in the head. I mean, they kind of get painted that way now, but they seem, I mean, you could probably get any of them around a table nowadays and they would be the most well put together people in the room, you know, if we could just get a couple dudes. So, I mean, it's this weird sort of arrested development of the, and I'm sure it's happening on the female side as well, but I'm not really privy to that as much as I am on the male side, but I definitely notice, especially when I was still working a day job and I had a bunch of peers I was working with and stuff like that, a real arrested development in where, like, you know, I'm talking about 40-year-old dudes or 35-year-old dudes that have a kids maybe. And the biggest thing they're looking forward to when they get off of work is going to play video games for 3 hours or to, you know, these sort of, which is fine, I guess, but I think that at the same time, there's some responsibility on the table, which is probably one of the reasons that we're living in such a fucked up world right now, is that we've made it so convenient that we don't have to grow up.
That's true. That's true. And it took me a long time to start growing up. Have I done it completely yet? Nope. But to start growing up. And I think, too, the idea of what you want to do as opposed to what you have to do, right? I have to pay taxes, probably a lot more than you guys do, I think, up there.
Well, you're in New York, so it's probably a coin toss. I mean, it's probably pretty close.
Okay. He knows New York. It's not that bad. Yeah. And a few other things. But when I do retire, which I don't know what that means. I hope I never know what that really means. I want to do other constructive things. So I love to work too, right? But I want to be able to, even now, do more of the constructive things that I would rather do instead of some of the things that I have to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping will happen more and more in my life, you know, and to me, then I can give more that way, even because that's my thing. I truly want to do whatever I'm doing at this point in my life to more so help others. Right. Is it just that? No, I want some more money, too. I want some more Haagen-Dazs maybe every now and then. But most of it is that for me.
Did he freeze? Did you freeze, Ronnie?
I sure did.
Oh, I can still hear you, though. That's good.
I sure did. Uh-oh. Maybe that's a good part to stop. That's weird how it just stopped that way, huh?
Well, I think the rest of the video should still be fine. So now, are you doing this? Is this like an online thing you're doing with your... Uh-oh. Ronnie.
Oh, I don't know how refreshing works. Might balance it right out. Oh,
hey, just refreshed.
All right.
Yeah.
So what were you going to say, Darren?
Oh, I was going to ask how the counseling works. Is it like an online thing, or is it in person, or how are you doing that?
Most of it's online, I'd rather it be personal, but people are seeming to really get a lot out of it online, so we're doing it that way a lot. I have a should I throw out some of my stuff right now with my website?
So
have a relatively newer website, and it's still kind of getting worked on right now, but it's called ronniefigueroa.com. if anybody ever wants to go in there and see a little bit more, learn a little bit more, you can go on my website again, www.ronniefigueroa.com. If people want to send me any information, you know, just back and forth through my email address, it's thehi3111@gmail.com. And people often ask me, why do you have a weird email address like that? There's too many letters in it. But it really spells out something. I started this institute, I'm calling it, and it's called the Holistic Energy Healing Institute, which spells out THEHI, which spells out, which says the high. I like that. Hey, the high, you know, without drugs, but the high, yeah. And the three is my magic number, like I was saying, the three-part practices, and just three is just a body, mind, energy, that kind of thing. And I have four children, so I put the four ones in there. So it's the high 3111@gmail.com. We have four meetings so far, and it's been doing relatively well, where we're getting groups together as a little community healing group, if you call it that. We call it the Energy Healing Institute. And we call it the Energy Healing Gathering now. And we get together once a month, the first Sunday of every month, from 12 p.m. to usually 1 p.m. Sometimes when we do breakout rooms, it could go longer. Basically, what we do is we have a time of quiet reflection on some contemporary music that would pertain to something in the world that's going on. Have people, if they want to move or not, or just, you know, whatever they want to do. Then we'll have a presenter come in and give some things that they want to discuss during that time. And we've had some really good feedback that way, people giving guided meditation kinds of teachings. There was one person talking about EMDR and various kinds of things. Somebody's going to come today and talk about her life story, where she lost her son and various kinds of things, and how she overcame a lot of things. So we'll have a segment of that. And then a short time of sending out energy, you know, if you want to call it sending out energy for healing for ourselves emotionally and physically, because I believe we can do that, and then send that out to the world, and then do the breakout rooms, and then a short little word after that. So I put it all out there, guys.
Is it getting harder to do this kind of thing as the culture seems to collectivize or this sort of monoculture where everyone's watching? I mean, I guess we sort of always dealt with it to a certain extent. When we had TV, it was always just the same channels. But now it seems almost to be, which is ironic because you would have thought that the cell phones and the internet and the YouTube and the billion hours a day of content that's uploaded to the internet. But we're still all seeing the same reels and we're still all, I mean, I'm sure it's by design. They're sending it down our throats, but it almost seems like even more so now, because before there seemed to be some splits at least in it. Whereas now it's like everyone from, it seems like 14 or 15 to 60 is getting the same, depending on what side of the pyramid you're on. You might be getting different of the same, but there's like
a
couple data streams that everyone's getting, and everyone sort of it's sort of this top-down thing. And how does that mix with Eckhart Tolle's individualist sort of spirituality thing? I mean, it's got to get trickier to find individualism in a world that's more and more mono.
It is, and I think there's something to that, you know, and maybe it's in my little ethereal way of thinking, but I think right now in 2026, and thank God I've lived, you know, like I'm a baby boomer, right, from the 60s and even late 50s and whatnot. I've seen it all, basically. And I think we're at a time right now where there's something generating with COVID, with 9/11, all these things together that's shaking the world. And people are becoming more and more frightened, running to some of these things that you're talking about, Darren, too much now, even more so. But things are like rattling in people right now. So I'm just hoping that there can be some groups, maybe mine could be a more helpful venue for that. But it needs to be something that's really genuine, that actually does change the world. That's what we need. We need a real shakeup. And we're at a good time where that could happen. Or it could go back to the same bullshit. Oops.
Or it could go worse. I mean, it could go worse.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It seems like it's weird to be paying attention and know you're at one of those weird tipping points in history. Yeah. You got to assume there's always been a few people that knew, you know, they're like, oh boy. But most of the culture seems to be ignorant of.
Ignorant to it, yeah. And why do you think that is? I mean, I would say possibly just because of the media, because of the brainwashing, because of
some of that, and then I think some of that goes back to that sort of arrested development of the general populace in the West, where everything sort of became me. The idea, the American dream, you know, where your kids always did better than you, sort of that sort of went away. And I think it's just part of that sort of, I don't know if it's a consequence. It might be a consequence of abundance. I mean, that is the real,
the
real problem is it could be a just an actual consequence.
I think definitely to some degree. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say with Darren, when you used your video gaming,
which might be why they built pyramids before, right? Like, we got to give these fucking guys something to do. Now that there's...
Yeah, the games are filling a gap that people, the men used to use for survival, all the stuff you had to do, seasonal gathering, all the kind of stuff you got to do to survive. Mm-hmm. Now it's like you don't have to do
that. Lottery stuff too, right? Because they're all talking to each other on their headsets and
they got their team.
And so there's that sort of...
Yeah, it's filling in that gap too.
Exactly.
It's a communal gap at the same time.
And what I come up, I can't help but come up with this. I was going to curse again, but I won't. So what?
You can. He didn't.
What the heck do we do?
I don't know. I don't know that. I think you just sort of, you know, you got to think, and I'm not comparing us to these guys at any level, but those are the sort of guys that were noticing their culture at the time, the guys like Nietzsche and guys like this that were living through this 100 years ago, what was going on then and knowing it was fucked. I mean, more prescient than we are. So I think it seems like you either find a way to ignore it to a certain extent or you slowly go mad.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-oh, I hope I'm not going mad. But one of the things that I think needs to be done collectively for some people, right, like me, you know, is to put yourself out there. I mean, even Nietzsche and a few other people, I can't think of specific names, but it wasn't like they were just sitting around and say, hey, it's all going to fall apart. They were saying, listen to what the F I'm saying. So it was like reaching out that way to create some kind of understanding. So I also think,
and I think there's way more people that know today, because those guys existed at a time when the access to information was pretty minute, whereas we've got the internet. Like, I do think there's way more people that do realize it than maybe at any, I mean, it's sort of a weird dynamic there where you've got more people that are awake than ever before and more people that are asleep than ever before.
Exactly.
And they found a way to like pit them against each other.
Yeah. And that's happening too much too. Where I'm learning, I'm glad you said it like that, because I'm learning, I hope, to incorporate both, to not get angry or frustrated with that other side. It's something that you had even said before, Graham, about learning how to do that. And at the same time, putting myself out there, even if I get, you know, it's almost like putting your head on a chopping block and being willing to put that much more of yourself out there to see change or to help create change. I think it's that important to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you we were never wired to deal with all of the world's tragedy. You know, there was a time like if we go back to our grandparents or great grandparents, especially yours, Ronnie, you're a little older than I am, but you know, they never knew what the fuck was going on in Afghanistan, or if there was a train that drove off a bridge in Zimbabwe, or, you know, if there was a genocide going on. I mean, I'm not saying that those things are good or don't matter, but, you know, when shit went down in your town, you knew about it. And that was probably like a couple tragedies a year, you know, legit tragedies a year. Not now, it's every single day, and it's going to cram it on your feed. Yeah. And it's going to show you high def pictures of it. I think that is part of the problem, is we were never dealt. We haven't evolved to deal with the level of information that's coming.
We haven't.
We're able to like personify it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what we're saying. I hope it's not running out of time, guys, because I'm just having the most wonderful time here.
No, it's all good. No, I wanted to just expand on something we touched on briefly, which was the rapidity that healing can happen. Like, do you have any examples of real client stories, of course, without breaching any confidentiality, just on, because I think it's important for people to realize that it doesn't have to take years and years. You know, you don't have to go through this huge, you know, learning curve of years and years. People can heal quickly from stuff. Do you have any examples of that from your practice?
Yeah. Well, as my own, I said, what took too long, but the healing of the this and that and this and that, and those things. And so it's a reality that we can do that. And that's good to know.
Yeah, exactly.
And with the, some of the people that I'm counseling, and I counsel all kinds of people, some people who believe in a higher power or God or spirit, some people who are atheists, you know, but the key part is to learn to believe in something that is already within you. More and more. And the more I try to encourage people to see this for themselves, the more I see transformations occurring in their lives in a shorter period of time. One person was anger, not just anger, it was explosive anger, where it was abusive and whatever. And he was going to lose his wife and the children and everything, right? And we just went back to different things, because everything that we do, for the most part, unless there's some neurological damage, which could happen to most of us, are doing these things because of what we've been conditioned by and our traumas from our past. That's pretty much all for most of us. And so what I try to help people to do is look inside yourself and let's work together to reveal this. Now, we're talking about some people who have PTSD, some, you know, how many are killing themselves every day now. But some of the people coming back from some of the wars and whatever that I've worked with. And when
you notice a higher success rate in either of those groups, or a higher or quicker success rate between atheists and people that believe in a higher power? Because, I mean, some of these...
What a great question.
Some of these long-lasting groups wouldn't even let you in if you couldn't.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Masons, the Rosicrucians, stuff like that. It's like, if you can't admit to a higher power than yourself, then you can't come in.
Right.
So they've attached some sort of, you know, I would argue that they've identified some sort of precursor in those two differences of people that makes one more fit for the brotherhood than the other. So I'm wondering if, I would assume, this guy could be ignorant, but my assumption would be that the people that believe in a higher power have better or faster success.
No, I haven't found that.
Opposite? No?
I haven't found that. I found that, like, just down-to-earth people, let me put it that way, if that's an explanation for something, usually respond quicker than the, quote, spiritual group, especially now the New Age kind of, that's another new word, New Agey kind of people. That's what I've found. And I think, again, those down-to-earth kind of people men harder because you got to break through that male shell and all that. But people who are willing to just, again, be vulnerable enough, learn to trust within themselves, and me helping them learning to trust me too. Because people, everybody I'm working with trusts me to some degree, but trust is one of the biggest problems with all of us. People don't see that, but it's deep down inside of all of us to some degree. And that's where, again, I try to help people learn how to deal with vulnerability, to deal with opening up, to understand what that means. And then we do a lot of guided imagery kind of things, you know, to let them tap into something that's really going on with some of these practices that we were talking about, whatever. Just about everyone, there's a couple of, you know, people who are so stuck in their own ego mind, what I call the selfish part of the ego mind, because we all need an ego, that they won't break through. A lot of that could be because of the traumas and whatever else. But the majority of people that I work with, when I approach it that way, and if I'm not making it clear enough, ask me, you know, even more specifically what I mean by this, they open up a little bit more and they'll start to see things. Wow, yeah, I get that. And then to me, that's go, wow, here we go. That's good. And then the next thing comes up. So what are you going to do about it? Because it's good to get something, but what are you practically going to do? That's the behavioral aspect. And so they'll go out and I'll like a life coaching. I'll go, hey, remember you said that you were going to, not that I want to tell them what to do. That's, you should avoid that in relationships and anything. But you said you want to do this. So did you do it? And then with that, even that makes them, because a lot of times we will fight when people tell us to do something, even because of traumas and conditions, whatever, especially in westernized societies. So with that, they'll start to open up more. They'll start to see things more within themselves. There's a one person whose brother died tragically in a car accident. They were like closer than brother and sister. She was totally devastated. We worked through some of the things and somehow I'm presenting it to you. And she saw different things inside of herself that she went through her grieving process in a relatively short period of time. Because grief can take a long period of time. Don't get me wrong. She's still hurting from it. But just to see the night and day change within her within about a year or so, another person within months, he stopped arguing. His wife is saying, you're a totally different person. He comes in here and sometimes he even cries. He's never done that before. I don't know if I'm answering a kind of a question
was that the same example you were using with the guy with the anger problem that we were talking about, rapid healing? Is that the same example?
When I say rapid, it happened in a relatively short period of time for him. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so a few more that way where it's more exciting to me and it makes me feel that maybe I'm doing better within my own self to be able to help other people help themselves that way.
Yeah. 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 That's great.
Yeah.
Ronnie, is there anything we didn't ask you that we should have?
I can't think of any. Again, I'm 72 years old. My brain cells are shot here. I don't know. It all felt good, guys, and it felt real. Okay. So I want to thank you for that. I hope I did well enough where you guys get it and other people will understand where I'm coming from and it can be helpful for them.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Ronnie Figueroa. Ronnie Figueroa, this has been great. Can you give us the websites again or any social media where our listeners can track you down if they want to find out more?
Okay, well, the social media part, I didn't say this before, but I do have a YouTube channel where I have some very unprofessionally made clips and videos. And my website, you know, which we're developing, is ronniefigueroa.com. It's RONNIEFIGUEROA. .com. My email address, if people want to get in touch with me, is THE31111@gmail.com.
There you have it. Ronnie Figueroa, thank you very much for taking some time out of your Saturday to come on the podcast. We hope you have a good rest of your day and keep in touch and come back sometime down the road.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
All right. Take care, guys.
And that was a chat with Ronnie Figueroa. What'd you think? That was a good one. I figured that one would resonate with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you talked about that meditate, that group, the group healing thing they were doing, the meditation and all that, it reminded me of that, the practice I wrote in that little book that I didn't ever finish.
Oh, your book. Yeah.
Where it was like the group of eight and we would send, instead of sending healing out to the world, though, we would just like do that kind of healing towards each other in a group. And then, you know, like the Lynn McTaggart group of eight type thing and
power
and
of
the
eight.
Intention and the intention work, the power of eight. And then the meditation, the alchemical meditation too at the same time. So it was kind of combining all that, which seemed very similar to what he was talking about.
We should have her back on. I got to email Mario Buildreps too. I meant to have him back on. It looks your buddy wants to come back on. I think we'll have him on Outlawed this time.
Yeah.
So that should be good. Big thanks to Ronnie for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Even bigger thanks if you do support the show. We don't do ads. We don't do paywalls. We just trust that if you guys are getting some value from the show, you'll send some value back our way over at grimerica.ca/support. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation today. You can also check out contact@thecabin.com for trips and events. Grimerica Outlawed for our other podcast. Adultbrain.ca for the audiobooks. simulationmaps.com for all those. I'm still having trouble with the simulation maps. It's just not rolling off the tongue like the other ones do yet. It takes a while. But simulationmaps.com for all those simulation maps we made. Other than that, I love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week. Way that
many cigarettes.